And good morning, live from Jacksonville.
Today?
Oh, rats, I forgot to push that button off. I did it now, though. I think it could be a most true statement that every single person that's listening to this radio broadcast this morning is really in need of transformation. You're in need of an upgrade. Every so often, my Apple iPhone will say, install a new upgrade. Usually I ignore it. Do you know what the word transformation means? Well, I just looked it up. It means to make a thorough or dramatic change in form or appearance or character of. I think I like that. That's the whole purpose of this program. I am prepared this morning to deliver good, wholesome information that will help you accomplish that. Do you know what transformation really is? Well, it's the complete opposite of disease. Cells and tissues going through the process of deterioration. You go through this decline. Who wants to walk from one room to the next and they completely forget why they're going into the kitchen? What were they after? Their mind doesn't remember. And the other thing is this, which is maybe so much more important than anything that I could say. But here's what it says in the book of Romans chapter 12 in the second half of verse 2. I know you know this, but I'm going to refresh your memories and I'm going to refresh mine. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. See, there's a command for us to be transformed. All right. Let me start over. You probably think that everything comes to me just super easy. It does not. There's a lot of things that I have to really dig and search for to try to find out what is the truth. Would you agree with me that it takes energy and effort to accomplish anything of value? I read a quote one time from the Pittsburgh Steelers football coach by the name of Mike Tomlin. Actually, I didn't read it. Well, I did read it, but it was on a YouTube short video. But it really impressed me. It was a short video. It couldn't have been more than 20 seconds long. But this is what he said, because I remember writing it down. I just found it this morning. I think I had it tucked away in the side of my Bible. This is what Mike Tomlin said. It's not what you're capable of. It's what you're willing to do. I like that. How many people do you know of that they're so talented, they're so capable, but there's just one little problem? Actually, it's not a little problem. It's a very big problem. They're not willing to do anything with it. Would you agree with me that us being blessed of God with a free will is a very powerful thing? See, I know people who are capable of great things. But I know fewer people who are willing, and health is no different. What are you going to do with what you got? Are you going to be a good steward? Sometimes I'll ask a person that's in dire straits that tells me they've done everything and they have no answers. They're not even better off than what they were. They're worse off for doing different types of therapies and treatments. And so sometimes I'll just pose them the question, what are you willing to do to restore your health? And of course, I have to leave it up to them. Well, I came across this article, and I don't even remember the year. It was, well, anyway, I'll look it up. Is that really important that I tell you the date of the publication? But this is interesting right here. So with the theme of transformation, which means to make a thorough or dramatic change in form, appearance, or character of. I think I like the last one the best, or character of. Does your character, is it in need of transformation? Do you need to change the form or the appearance or the function of your body? Well, that'd be called healing if it did. So, here's an article about individuals that have never really exercised in their life. And what they did was they tried, and this is really interesting, so just kind of pay attention to this and see if you can get any gold nuggets, you know, from this information, you know, something of real value. So they took a group of men that had never exercised before, really, in their life. Yeah, maybe they played on the playground, or they did jumping jacks when they were in the fifth grade, you know, for PE class. But as far as them having the daily habit of exercising, no, not so much. Now, I'm not saying they didn't mow the grass or, you know, take their dog on a walk to the park. That's not what I'm saying. But they don't have any type of, they've never experienced regimented devotion to exercise for the purpose of trying to transform their health or their body. Okay, so when they took a group of men who tried strength training for the very first time in their life, they wanted to find out if they could actually build more muscle, if they could get more strength, if they could lose some body fat. And all they were going to do is they were going to give one group of men doing calisthenics a supplement. It's just an herb. It's a plant, or an herb or spice, if you want to call it that, called fenugreek. And then they gave some men a placebo, which means it had nothing in it. All right? So when we discuss this, you've got the idea of when you exercise or you do calisthenics, calisthenics could be everything from jumping jacks to squats to leg swings to calf raises to, you know, lunges. You could do burpees, push-ups, pull-ups. Did I mention squats yet? You could do crunches, all these. You could do an L-sit, just all these different things. The only thing that is required that you need is your body and a willing spirit. So what they're looking for, they're trying to find out, can we actually build some new tissue here? Can we grow some new muscle? Can we cause brand new cells to grow in the body? And of course, when you grow new cells, you're trying to replace the old damaged cells with new healing cells. Well, wouldn't that be called healing? Wouldn't you and I call that rejuvenation? Replacing old, weakened, dysfunctional, damaged cells with super happy cells, cells that are strong, that work exactly the way that God has designed them to work. And every bit of it's to benefit you. All things are to benefit you and to make you a better person. Would you believe me if I told you that all healing has to take place at the cellular level? So what I want you to do is give your cells a good home. Here's a study right here. All right. Researchers from the University of Sydney in Australia, they had 98 men. And these men were between the ages of 25 and 47, which I can assure you I am not beneath the age 25. I've blown past that just a little bit. But they had these men complete a calisthenics workout at home between 2 to 3 times a week for 8 weeks. See, that's all they asked them to do. Would you be willing to do a calisthenic routine in your home? You don't have to join a gym. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to drive an hour. You just have to do calisthenics. And they did this for 8 weeks, which is essentially 2 months, okay? Now, see, these men were active, meaning they could walk, and they were relatively healthy, but they had never done any form of strength training before. That's how they got into this study. And so, would you say that squats and push-ups and pull-ups, that would definitely push your body toward getting stronger? Well, yeah. So these men had never done that before. That's why I find it so interesting. So some of the men, they used a placebo, which means they gave them a capsule of a supplement that really had nothing in it. There was no nutritional value. There was nothing in it that the body could actually use in a positive, productive way. So it didn't contain vitamins. There were no minerals. There was no such thing as amino acids or fatty acids. There were no herbs that could strengthen the body. That's a placebo. There's nothing in it. Now, the other group of men, they gave them 300 milligrams. I'm sorry, they gave one group of men 300 milligrams of fenugreek. And then they gave another group of men 600 milligrams of fenugreek, which, I mean, a 300 milligram capsule, that's not very big. You know what the secret is to swallowing a capsule or a pill? Fill your mouth full of water and just simply drink the water down. You just have to say, "Roy, all you're doing is swallowing water." So if you swallow the water, the pills and the capsules just naturally go down with it. It's as simple as that. It's mind over matter, right? Now, it does say here, and I'll read this to give you full disclosures. It says the extract that the researchers used was a supplement called Testofen. And, you know, when you see the word Testofen, you think, are they talking about testosterone? Which I'm looking at a bottle of it right now. It's written in Australian, so I can barely read it. It was a product of the company called Gencore. They sponsored the study, which I know what you're thinking. Well, does that mean that the researchers were biased? Well, I hope not. But, you know, all those things is not going to hurt to question everything, right? Don't you think it's okay if we question it? Okay, here's the results right here. So they had three groups. One, first group, only a placebo, nothing in it. And then they did calisthenics 2 to 3 times a week for 2 months. Second group, 300 milligrams of fenugreek a day. Third group, 600 milligrams a day. So I guess they broke them up into thirds. And so what they found out was that the ones that took the fenugreek, the 600 milligrams, they had a decrease in their body fat by 1.6 kilograms. Now, if I, 1.6 times 2.2, that means, no, I did that wrong, 2.2 times 1.6. Okay, they lost 3.5 pounds. You're thinking, well, that's not very impressive. Okay, well, then keep thinking that way. But what happened was, the men that took the fenugreek, they had a very significant increase in strength. So ask yourself this question. Would I rather be frail and weak, poor balance, or would I rather be strong, very sure of where my feet are in gravity? Do you want to fall over and break a hip? No. You have to have strength and balance to do that. Okay. This is the part where it's almost comical to me. So in the placebo group, which only did calisthenics, but they didn't use any active ingredient in the supplement, the researchers were unable to detect any significant changes. They didn't grow any muscle. They didn't lose any fat. They didn't get any stronger. That is just shocking. All right. Maybe what you could say is, well, that's proof right there. They received a placebo. There was nothing in it. Now, supplementation with the fenugreek, it caused a modest increase in testosterone levels. Now, I've got the chart right here in front of me. And, the print is so small, I can't really read it. It measures testosterone, free testosterone. It also measures sex hormone binding globulin. It measures estradiol levels. I can't read the print. It's that teeny tiny small. But maybe it's my fault for not trying to blow it up where I could read it or look up the study from a different format. So, needless to say, here's your takeaway right here. When they used fenugreek, they saw a loss of body fat. They saw an increase in testosterone levels. Now, if you don't know what testosterone is for in a man, it plays a very integral role in a man having motivation. Do you know what the word persistence means? A greater desire to compete. And so, I hate to say it, women, but that's the way that men are wired. If you had three men fishing on a pond, they would start razzing each other big time over who caught the biggest bass or the smallest bass or any of that stuff. So, but I'm telling you, that's a good thing. It's good to kind of, encourage someone to do better. So, do you want to achieve things in this world? You got to have testosterone. How about the pursuit of goals and being able to handle challenges? Well, you're going to need testosterone to do that. So, the part that I thought about when it comes to women, well, you've got to have testosterone if you want your bones to be strong. Testosterone has so much to do with how strong your bones are. And man, do we need strong bones. We need to stop this business of women hitting 55 to 60 and their bones begin to crumble and deteriorate and they have fractures. That's just ridiculous. You know, another thing, and I looked it up this morning, I just wanted to double check because it's so fascinating. But if a man is low in testosterone, then his production of red blood cells and sperm is going to be really low. So what do you do if there's a man that if you look at like the last 2 or 3 years of his blood test, and it shows that his red blood cell count is low, his hemoglobin is low, his hematocrit is low, that means he's anemic. You've got to get, you're not going to reverse your anemia by eating donuts. No. You're going to have to eat things that actually increase testosterone. How about red meat? I know it gets a bad rap, but I can't remember where I read it this morning, but they're saying now there's a study on people that use the vegan meat. Like if you want to say, I really don't believe in eating meat, I'm going to have a veggie burger. Well, you're asking to destroy your body. I'll have to look that up again because I remember kind of laughing as I read that. I said, okay. All right. Once again, we have studies that shows it's maybe not a good plan to eat veggie burgers. Okay, so let me repeat what happened in the placebo group. These were the men that got no fenugreek, okay? So it's really, really impressive. Here's the impressive results of the placebo group. They had no experience with strength training or fitness. They did 8 weeks of calisthenics without building any muscle. They didn't lose a lick of fat. They didn't build any strength. I would say that's a job well done, wouldn't you? No, that's pathetic. Just literally unbelievable. So which category do you want to be in? Well, you want to be in the one where the men become leaner and they lose a little bit more of their body fat and they become stronger and they have a little bit more ambition and drive and motivation. I think that's a category that I want to run toward. Okay, another study right here. This one is really, really, really good also. Okay, so sometimes I lose my place on this, but this is so important. Folks, if you have diabetes, I'm kind of switching gears here, but it's really the same topic. If you have diabetes and you're not in good working order, well, then maybe you need to start today deciding, come up with a plan. What am I going to do? Now, I'm not trying to be critical by saying this because it doesn't do a lick of good. But if all you do is just follow the standard protocol for diabetes, there's like the highest probability or chance that you're going to be stuck in diabetes for the rest of your life. And I do not recommend you do that. I recommend that you become unshackled. You need to go ahead and cut that chain off of you, that ball and chain that's keeping you from making progress, and you need to be a student of health, and you need to just go ahead and completely reverse the diabetes, make it go away, be done with it, say sayonara. I think that's Japanese for adios. Sayonara. That's a good one, isn't it? Maybe I should start saying that every time I have see somebody and say goodbye. Sayonara. Anyway, so, all right, we're talking about fenugreek. Even if you have never heard a single thing about it, I think this is good information. Man, is this good information. So, Here's the title of the article. If I can find it. No, I can't find it. What did I do with it? Okay, there's that. I'm organized. Where's the rest of it? 2, 3. I'm sorry. This is totally my fault. I'm not doing this on purpose. Okay, I've got it organized now. I'm back on track. That was my bad. Okay, so here's the premise of this article right here that I looked up. They go on to say that there's an anti-diabetic herb called fenugreek. And you know what? From what I can tell, fenugreek doesn't like diabetes. Maybe you don't like diabetes either. So maybe you and fenugreek should become really good friends and become well acquainted so y'all can both work on the same page to make diabetes go away. So they're going on to say that fenugreek extracts or supplements, as well as dried fenugreek, because they tried the dried also, it improves the way the body handles glucose. And you're probably going to counter and say, but Dr. Morgan, I love taking my metformin and my glucophage. It's like my favorite part of the day, putting another pharmaceutical drug in my body. I just love it. Okay, then don't listen to this. But the effect of the fenugreek is so strong that diabetics are healthier if they actually supplement with fenugreek. So what does that mean? They actually use the big, beautiful brains that God gave them to find out, what can I do to help myself? Since I ate myself and got myself into this fix, how am I going to get myself out of it? And they read about fenugreek. Well, I would imagine that your body is saying, thank you so much. You are making me so happy by giving me some fenugreek. So the thing that's amazing about this study is, even if these diabetics are taking a boatload of drugs and exercising, fenugreek still worked really, really well. All right, here's a study. South Korean scientists affiliated with WOOSUK. I'm not making that up. WOOSUK. How do you pronounce it? WOOSUK University. Okay, I'm getting off that topic. They collected information from 10 previously published trials in which researchers had treated diabetics, or if you're not diabetic yet, if you're a pre-diabetic, which you got to take that seriously if you know what's good for you, they treat them with fenugreek. Now, these trials lasted anywhere between 8 weeks to 16 weeks, so that's basically 2 to 4 months, which in my mind, isn't that long enough to see if something is helping, if you're getting better? Okay, sometimes the test subjects received supplements with extracts of fenugreek, and sometimes they just used the dry powder. I don't know how you could make it any cheaper than that. Or one of the studies used dried fenugreek seeds. There you go. They got it in a supplement form and capsule, or they just bought the bulk powder that had been dried and ground up, or they got the seeds. Okay, in the later doses, what is the dose? Now, I'm confused about that. Can I say this right here? The people that took it in capsule form, they took 2 to 6 capsules a day of the fenugreek, and I tried to look up the exact dose, but I couldn't find it. Sometimes that happens. I'll have a question like, tell me exactly how much that they took, but sometimes you just can't figure it out. You don't know what it was. But these were 10 studies. It was done by Korean scientists at the university. And they either gave them the powdered form, they gave them the fenugreek seeds, or they gave it to them in capsule form. All right, here's the results right here. But I think you get what I'm saying. They gave them fenugreek. Are you with me on that? Okay. I just can't determine which one was which. But they also did the fenugreek in combination with people that were taking all the drugs, like metformin and glucophage, and they were exercising, okay? So here's what they found out. Fenugreek supplementation reduced the concentration of glucose in their blood early in the morning, even before they had breakfast. Now, let me talk about that. What does that mean if a person, say, let's just say that there's a person's a diabetic, and they're not doing a good job of it, but when they lay down in bed to go to sleep at night, they go, oh, I am doing so good. My blood sugar is exactly 113 milligrams per deciliter. And you know what? 113 is a lot better than 213, so I give them that. But what does that mean if you go to bed, you know, you haven't eaten since 10 o'clock at night, you haven't eaten in 4 hours, you had your supper at 6, and your blood sugar is exactly 113 before bedtime, you're going, all right, this is working out great. Well, what do you think is happening if you wake up in the morning, even though you haven't had anything to eat, and your blood sugar all of a sudden is 213 or 175? Well, you're going, what is the deal? I went to bed, it was 113. Shouldn't it be like a lot lower right now? Well, yeah. I mean, during the daytime, the mitochondria in your cells that generate and make energy for you, they're burning glucose and carbohydrates because you're eating. That makes sense. But at nighttime, they're supposed to completely switch over to burning ketone bodies, which means at about the 3.5 to 4 hour mark after you have your supper, your body's supposed to switch over and start burning fat for fuel. So what gives? Why would blood sugar shoot up? Well, I think that's called the dawn phenomenon. They say it's a natural rise in your blood sugar that occurs somewhere between 4 and 8 a.m. And it's probably most likely because there is a release in human growth hormone, or what if the adrenal glands, with maybe the help of the liver, have this most inappropriate surge of cortisol where there's a little bit too much of it. Sometimes that happens when people are overly stressed all the time. Or there's glucagon or adrenaline or epinephrine. Well, all those things increase blood sugar. Which to me, I kind of would trace almost all these things back to the liver. Now, this is my opinion, but I think every diabetic case is a liver case. You've got to fix the liver. So, but fenugreek, back to fenugreek. Fenugreek supplementation reduced blood sugar in the morning. Oh my goodness, now that's called healing. So instead of your blood sugar going from 113 at night before you go to bed when you check it to 175 in the morning, which is not good, you got all that sticky sugar clogging up your arteries, clogging up your liver, leading you toward a neuropathy. I know there's all these people that can barely walk because I see them in the store all the time. They can barely move, and it's just horrible. But a lot of that's due to just too much blood sugar. And I can tell you right now, you're not going to make any headway with them. It ain't going to work. I had a woman this week sit in front of me, and she was telling me everything about her body's perfect, but when I looked at her blood work, it told a different story. So she's not a patient of mine, by the way, so it's not like I'm divulging information. But I'll just say it in simple terms. That's not reality. Okay? So if you want your blood sugar to be lower in the morning, well, in this study right here, it said one of the very best ways to support blood sugar is fenugreek. It said fenugreek had this effect on its own, but it also was enhanced the glucose-lowering effect of medication and exercise. So for people that were taking metformin and they were exercising every day, they got even better results when they had fenugreek. What else did I find on this? I'm just going to make this sound simple. You know what the blood marker is called? Hemoglobin A1C. Man, that is a good test. I like it. I think that everyone should have their hemoglobin A1C done. It gives you a really good indication of what your average blood sugar is over a 3-month period of time, give or take. You know, maybe not exactly 12 weeks, but maybe just 2.5 because of the condition of the body. But anything that lowers hemoglobin A1C means your body is becoming so much healthier at generating, manufacturing, producing energy. I've said this so many times that you're going to think that I'm a broken record once again this morning on the radio, but it takes energy to heal the body, to keep the body in good working order. Energy is the currency of the body. So if I asked you to rate your energy levels on a scale of 10 being the absolute most excellent levels of energy and 0 would be complete total exhaustion, that would be the person that says, Dr. Morgan, I have to collapse on the couch after stumbling from the bed to the couch for hours because I'm exhausted. Oh, that doesn't sound good. I don't like that. But that would be low energy production. And what we have to do is we have to retrain the body to generate better energy. You want to heal? You need more energy. I know there's people that are convinced that they're the epitome of health, but when you look at them, they are not. So, you know, the only thing that really matters this morning is that you have an open mind and you're willing to ask questions. Can I be better than what I am right now? What is my potential? What are the limits that I have? Can I actually improve my health? Well, the answer is yes. So they showed that hemoglobin A1C went down with fenugreek. Okay, have I pretty much... Here. Thought I was through. I know there's a lot of moving parts to this, but I'm giving you clues. You have to decide if it's of value to you. So have you ever heard of a form of cholesterol called HDL, high-density lipoprotein? It's really not cholesterol, it's a lipoprotein. Man, everything in the body is fabulous, if that's probably somewhere between 60 and 75. Above 95, then you've got some problems. That could actually lead to Alzheimer's, dementia. There could be an autoimmune disease. You could have a hyperthyroid. Something is generating a whole lot of inflammation. Even if you only consume a little bit of alcohol, man, can you mess the body up with alcohol? Let me pose a question to you. How many people have you ever seen their life was greatly enhanced or greatly improved by consuming alcohol? Well, that's a rhetorical question. If you want to have clogged arteries or atherosclerosis, well, that's what you see when HDL starts going up well above 100. I looked up one study this morning, and I didn't read the whole article, but it said anything above 80 on the HDL. So if you look at if you're a doctor or a nurse or a PA or nurse practitioner, I don't want to leave anybody out. Maybe you yourself just go to the lab and say I'd like to have a lipid panel where they measure total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL and LDL, VLDL. Those are all good to look at. I think it's a good way to measure what's going on inside. But when the HDL starts going above the number 80, that's what they see with dementia. And when you start seeing HDL go above 90, one article was saying this is one sign that a person might be heading toward, you know, cardiovascular disease. I'm talking about plaque and gunk building up in the coronary arteries. And of course, there's one drug that can actually cause that. And I realize as soon as I say this, you're going to say that's not true. But I read that statins can cause HDL to go up way too high. Not in everybody, but in some people, which to me sounds kind of counterproductive. The other thing is, if your liver and your gallbladder is all clogged up and dirty, then your HDL can go up high. So I've given you a whole bunch of clues on how to kind of solve and figure this out. But they showed that cholesterol levels did improve on fenugreek. They talked about any potential for adverse reactions. Well, of course. Some people might say my stomach feels a little bit queasy after taking, you know, a lot of fenugreek. But I didn't read anything about projectile vomiting or diarrhea. Okay. So I think that's a really, really, really good thing to think about. I have one more article. This one is kind of by request. But, I mean, this is just pure gold right here. I hope that you listen to this and you try to find some way. How does this apply to me? Just ask yourself that question. Is there anything in this article that might apply to me? It's about magnesium supplementation preventing migraine headaches. And so, you know, here's a bottom line. The most common neurological problem in otherwise healthy people, guess what it is? It's a migraine headache. Now, this came all the way back from the year 2003, which means 21 years ago, give or take. Neurologist at Kaiser Permanente, in the United States that reported that magnesium supplements reduce the number of days that young patients suffer from headache by over 40%. And I thought, what do they mean, young patients? They're talking about children. Could you imagine how discouraged that a parent would be if you had a young daughter or a son that just suffered horribly from migraine headaches? Okay. In the 1990s, neurologists at the Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit, Michigan, discovered that people who suffer from migraine headaches, they, lo and behold, they have less magnesium in their blood than compared to people who do not suffer from these crippling headaches. That comes from the Journal of Neurological Science, 1995, the month December, volume 134, pages 9 through 14. Read it for yourself. Because they go on to say, blood vessels in the brain, they contract. You ever had an ice cream headache, like you eat ice cream way too fast, and all of a sudden the blood vessels, they contract, they clamp down, and you have sharp pain. So blood vessels in the brain, they contract when there is too little magnesium. Because, and this is their logic, okay, so if I call magnesium the great relaxer, just an idea. They're saying that because a magnesium deficiency can boost the production of a chemical called substance P. You know why they call it substance P? P is for pain. So let me say that again. When you're low in magnesium, that increases your body's production of a substance called substance P, which means you're going to have pain, baby. So the scientists, they hypothesize that a shortage of magnesium may actually increase the likelihood of a migraine. They say that a healthy diet provides hundreds of milligrams of magnesium every day, of course. Wouldn't that be the key? A healthy diet. Ask yourself this question, how many people do you know, do they consume a healthy diet? I think that's a reasonable question. Maybe I could venture a guess that a significant percentage of the population has a little bit of room for improvement with a healthy diet. Okay, magnesium is a metal. It's found in foods like almonds, you got cashews, there's other nuts, beans, I think it says soybeans, tofu, leafy vegetables, fish from the ocean's a good source, whole grains. Kind of thing, just think green leafy vegetables. But because of our fondness of junk food based on refined carbohydrates, it is so easy to consume less magnesium than the amount that nutritionists say that we need. I'm thinking about Dr. Grabowski when I was in college. He was a nutritionist. He was the one that taught me these things. I recommend you take notes. In 2003, neurologist at Kaiser Permanente in California, they published the results of a study in which they had given 42 children between the ages of 3 and 17. Now, that is just almost borderline intolerable. How can we have 3-year-olds with severe migraine headaches that are just incapacitating? That's horrible. Well, let me tell you what they used. They gave these little kids with bad migraine headaches, they gave them 9 milligrams of a form of magnesium, which is really not that great. It's probably the worst, but it's the one they gave them. It's called magnesium oxide. They gave them 9 milligrams for every kilogram that they weighed. So, for example, this is their example. It's just about totally ridiculous. But anyway, let me go on. They said if a child weighs 80 kilograms, okay, so if you take 80 and you convert it to pounds, you know, from the metric system to the standard system, which is how we operate here in America, I'm all for the metric system. I just don't think in those terms. So if you have a child that weighs 80 kilograms, that means you got a child that weighs 176 pounds. I hope we're not talking about a 3-year-old. That amounts to 720 milligrams of magnesium oxide per day. So what they did was they gave him 9 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. The researchers divided the dose over 3 unique moments throughout the day, and they gave the children the supplement during meals, so it went down with their food, and the experiment lasted for 16 weeks. They had a control group. of 44 children that were just given a placebo, which means they did not get any magnesium. During the study, the number of days that the children were in the... I'm sorry, I butchered that. During the study, the number of days that the children in the magnesium group had a headache, well, lo and behold, it went down significantly. That didn't happen in the placebo group. There was no change. You know, it just keeps getting better and better when you, do this over time. That's just the idea of being persistent and consistent and focused and staying on task and sticking to your guns. Magnesium oxide is really just some inorganic salt of magnesium. It's got ions of magnesium and oxygen. It really has very low bioavailability. If you ask me, it's better as a laxative, meaning if you can't poop and you want to poop and you need to poop, then taking a boatload of magnesium oxide, it might actually make you poop. I know a lot of people, they like to use that as an antacid, which means if they have acid reflux all the time, they might take that. So, I just read to you that when you're low in magnesium, your blood vessels are prone to contracting. Well, what else would that cause? When your blood vessels contract, they don't carry as much oxygen to the muscles as they should, which means your muscles are going to contract. So, do you hear where I'm going with this? If you're low in magnesium, that means your neck is going to kill you, and you're going to, probably because you're so stressed out that you can't think straight. And lo and behold, does emotional mental stress cause you to burn through your magnesium at a much faster rate? Well, of course it does. I could probably develop the next year of this program just talking about magnesium and all its implications. Now, of course, I'm not going to do that because I want to try to help as many people as possible. But what have we learned so far? If you want to have chronic pain, that substance P, then don't get your magnesium levels corrected. If you want to have uncontrollable stress where you're a wreck all the time, then don't take magnesium. Do you know that when people have low levels of magnesium, it makes them so much more sensitive to stress? That's opposed to people that are very resilient and very hardy. So the more stress you have, the more magnesium you lose. The lower the magnesium, the less magnesium you have in your body, the more pain, the more stress, the more anxiety attacks, the more migraine headaches. Maybe as a side note, I looked up, does marijuana consumption cause magnesium deficiency? It's like, oh boy, yes it does. I don't know what the exact mechanism is, but can we just say it this way? When you smoke marijuana, your body dumps magnesium. The other one is, we got to be real about this, because this is the truth of it. Caffeine. You might be able to tolerate a little bit, but I don't think any human needs a lot of caffeine. Because when you consume a lot of caffeine, it causes your kidneys to release or dump or let go of the life-sustaining magnesium. Okay. This is the rest of the study. It shows the magnesium group. These are the kids that had the migraine headaches. When they did have a headache, the severity of the headache was significantly less. I mean, when they had a headache, it was a lot less painful compared to the placebo group that didn't get any magnesium. So I think that's a pretty good sales pitch for magnesium, because the placebo group, they didn't get any relief at all. Okay, what else did I want to cover right here? No, I'm not going to talk about that. Let's just go ahead and go to the phone lines. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hello, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
I am excellent, thank you. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing very well. I have a question for you. So I have cardiomyopathy post-COVID. What can I do to help my heart?
Okay, well, I have to ask you a question. A post-COVID vaccine?
Well, I had the vaccine 2 years before. I had COVID in 22, and then I started 3 weeks afterwards, started having an asthma attack. And it turns out...
3 weeks after having COVID?
Yes.
So you're saying the COVID vaccine did not prevent you from getting COVID. Is that correct?
Well, most definitely.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. So what can I do to strengthen my heart?
All right. You've got a couple issues right here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to cover this from three or four different directions and just kind of hear me out. And please ask all the questions you want. Do you know what the word viral reservoir means? It's like a new term that they're using as it relates to COVID. Have you ever heard the term viral reservoir?
No, but I understand viral, so...
Okay, do you know what the word reservoir means?
Well, I think of it as water, as something that holds.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we're on the same page. So, what they're finding with COVID, and I hate to be negative, but COVID most likely is just completely... a synthetically man lab created virus to do a lot of damage to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Sorry to be negative, but I'm sure that there's some people that are living on this earth right now. They would much prefer if about 7.5 billion people would just go ahead and die and leave all the resources and, you know, everything for them. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now that we've covered the worst, we can start talking about the best. So most likely what they're finding is, even after somebody's had COVID, there may be one particular unique organ, and I could say, what if it was the heart or the kidneys or the adrenal glands or the brain? There's going to be one location where the COVID virus, it ain't leaving. It has set itself up. And the problem with the virus is this. It doesn't add anything at all to the human body. It's just a poisonous, vile, toxic villain that's constantly taking a dump inside of the cells full of toxic poison. Does that make sense? It's like venom. So it steals everything from the nucleus of your heart, and it uses it to manufacture itself. So most likely what you're dealing with is a continual, ongoing, low-grade viral infection of your heart. That's the way I would interpret it. I could be wrong, but for example, if we did simple lab tests on you, most likely, your white blood cell count would be consistently below 5.7. And if you don't understand what that means, you just type in, what does a white blood cell count below 5.7 mean? It means you've got a continual, ongoing, low-grade infection. So I would venture a guess. One of the main things you're dealing with is you've got a COVID infection of your heart, and you hadn't gotten over it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Here's the other problem. And I'm not going to go into it in great detail, but I'm just going to say there's a whole bunch of residual gunk from the vaccine that we got to deal with and take care of.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start talking about the positive solutions. What we have to do is, by the way, I'm going to make a joke out of this, okay?
Okay.
What are the three causes of all health problems? Infection, infection, infection. I don't know why I thought that was funny, but I thought it was. So that's what you've got right now, and you've got all the side effects. The other issue is your immune system is not able to rise to the occasion and get the job done. That COVID vaccine and the COVID virus itself, it is so stealthy, meaning it has figured out how to completely evade your immune system from being detected. But God has designed the immune system to detect any type of foreign entity or invader that might come in contact with you, because you're better off if your immune system can actually identify, figure out where the problem is and how to correct it. And so I'm just going to say that God has designed this tremendously great intelligence within the human body that we don't really understand. I don't, anyway. And so let me talk about the thymus gland. The master control gland of the entire body is called the thymus gland. You ever heard of that?
Yes.
Okay, so in a different situation, if a person had a cold and that cold hung on for 3 weeks, to me, the first thing I would say is, well, you should have been over it in 2 to 3 days, but because you're not, that means your thymus is not working well. So one of the things that I want you to consider is that there's some things that destroy the thymus gland. And I'll just list those briefly. If you want to destroy the immune system, you need to consume Splenda, sucralose, aspartame. So you already know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about artificial sugar.
Okay.
You don't even consume that, do you?
No.
Well, what did that mean?
Maybe I do.
Well, and so now you know that if you consume any amount of Splenda, you will never, ever get well. Forget about it. Not going to happen. I can almost guarantee that. So every time you drink a Diet Dr. Pepper, it's basically you're destroying yourself. So I would encourage you, don't do that. Number two, look, Google, what is the number one predictor of an infection that never, ever goes away? Why can't I heal? And they're going to say it's your blood sugar.
Okay.
So if you had a test called I already talked about blood sugar at 5.7 or below. If that's the case, you got a chronic infection. If they did a test called hemoglobin A1C, if that's 5.7 or above, that means you probably have biofilms or you have an infection. You've got this chronic viral load on the heart, and your body ain't getting rid of it. So do you know anything about your labs or your tests at all?
Yeah, my last A1C was like 7.5.
That means you have a chronic, continual, ongoing infection that is not leaving your body under any circumstances. So I'm right about that. And so you've got to cut out all the sugar in your diet. All of it. Except if it comes from blueberries or strawberries or raspberries. Did I mention blackberries?
I looked in my lab work, and so my white blood count is like 9.7.
That means your body's trying its best to fight an infection. Your body is fighting like crazy.
Yeah, because my neutrophils are like 76.
That means you're fighting a wicked infection. That's what that means. Your doctor already explained all your labs to you, right?
No.
Yeah, so, that's what I thought. That's just ridiculous right there. Is that called negligence? Anyway, go ahead.
And my lymphocytes are extremely low.
Of course they are. That's because your body is in hand-to-hand combat. There is a war or a battle going on within your body right now. What did I just tell you? I just told you, cut out the Splenda and the artificial sugar. And then
I don't use artificial sugar anywhere. I do regular sugar.
Okay, so that means you don't have any chewing gum, you don't use breath mints, nothing like that, right?
All right, I will occasionally use those, but not very often. I usually
Just for the purpose of education, I'm trying to cover as many bases as I can so other people that use Splenda will go, aha, I heard Dr. Morgan say that, so that's why I'm doing it that way.
Okay.
But number two, if you eat packaged processed foods that have added sugar to them, that's one of the things that's going to get you into a deep hole where your immune system can never get out of it. So I'm just trying to cover a lot of bases to help as many people as possible. The easy thing for me to say is your thymus gland is probably very atrophied, very weak. It's just not able to rise to the occasion. So one solution that you have is, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but you need to start sunbathing every day. Is that doable?
Well,
is it doable?
It's cold, but yeah.
Well, what does that have to do with anything?
30-something degrees outside.
Not right now. It's not. It's only 40.
Well, wait a minute. Okay, 41. Okay.
All right, but what's your point? Are you saying I will participate in taking care of myself if everything's super comfortable and hunky-dory?
It's easier to do it.
Of course it's easier. It's easier if you know what would be a lot easier? It'd be easier if the virus just left your body and went away. And
it
your
would.
Immune system, that would be so. Have you asked it to leave? You could write it a love note. Dear coronavirus, it's been great spending time with you, but now we just need to part ways. And I got stuff to do with my life. So, all right, I'm not going to dwell on that, but the choice is yours. You decide. Okay. But you need to start feeding your thymus gland. And one of the ways you could do that is you could take what's called thymus extract. Usually, that's probably going to come from, you know, a cow source, which I have no problem with whatsoever. So when they take a cow to the processing plant, they'll just remove the thymus gland, freeze dry it, put it in tablet or capsule form. But I would recommend you take a bunch of that if you want to get well.
Okay. I can do that.
The next thing that I would have you consider is the largest filter of the lymphatic system, or the largest filter of the immune system, is called the spleen.
Okay.
And just because of time, I'm not going to talk about the spleen for like the next 5 minutes to burn up time. Why don't you consider taking some spleen extracts?
Okay. I can do that.
Now, there are many parts of the immune system, but one part of the immune system that's failing in you is called humoral immunity. Humoral immunity is the ability of your immune system to generate antibodies, and that's what you want. You want your immune system to make antibodies so the antibodies can go attach themselves to the corona or the COVID virus, or whatever you want to call it. And that way it helps your immune system recognize it as an invading enemy, kind of like a cancer. And so all that's based on protein. So you probably need a bare minimum of probably about 120 grams of protein a day. So if you ate one egg, that's about 6.5 grams of protein. If you ate six eggs, let me see, 6 times 6.5, that's 39 grams of protein. So that's about a third of what you need. Could you eat six eggs every day?
I could, yeah.
Did you know that in every egg there's about 100 to 150 milligrams of immunoglobulins, the very thing that bolsters and strengthens your immune system?
I did not know that.
Well, that's true. You can look it up for yourself. It's very interesting. So if you got some good high-quality eggs and you start eating them, your immune system might say, oh my goodness, we actually have some protein now. We might actually be able to start making some antibodies. But you don't have to eat just that. You could have tuna fish salad for lunch. You could have a T-bone steak for supper. You could eat, two big honking chicken breasts. But you have to emphasize protein when you have a chronic infection.
Okay.
And the next thing, just for simplicity, and there's no way I can even cover half of it, but vitamin C is literally one of the most critical water-soluble vitamins if you want to overcome a chronic infection. Now, I usually use protomorphogens for the heart when I'm trying to heal it, but we just can't cover everything in like one quick phone call. But so I've given you a starting point, and you have to decide what you're going to do with them, but I would say do your best to take good care of yourself and go ask all these same exact questions of your doctor and let your doctor come up with a plan. He may have a, or she may have a plan superior to mine.
Okay.
All right. Well, I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye. All right. Unfortunately, I think we're out of time. Wendy always tells me exactly how much time I have, and usually I don't exactly pay as much attention to this as I should. I just think about, what can I do to help you? Really, isn't that the whole purpose of me being here? What can I do that's in your best interest? It's been good being with you today. Lord willing, I'll be back next Saturday morning. You're listening to Health Essentials, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.